Curtis out there trying to come up.
Wow.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Yeah, yeah.
Hit the Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Let's go. Okay.
Wow.
Mike
in the house or something like that, bro?
Oh, no. It's Wednesday, so it made me think about it.
Yeah. I love it, man. What a fantastic way to start talking sports with 12th Man. The month of August is quickly coming to an end, but again, we have a lot of things to celebrate.
Crazy.
Leo season. Me being broke this month because of all that. But it's all good, man. Nah, anniversaries,
man,
a lot
broke.
Of fun things. But we are going
to
turn the
don't claim to be broke, man. Claim that money is coming to me.
Actually, I'm not going to claim that I'm broke. Not at all. I'm not putting the universe on the stage. It was a fun month. How about that? You know, I was a little lighter, but that's all good. I'll make it back up, man. It's all good. So, again, we are talking sports on a special Wednesday edition. Gentlemen, it's been a while since it's been the original three. Not that we don't like having Curtis and Gary, obviously, here and everyone. But, again, it's just now it feels like we can have more time to kind of share our thoughts and little things like that, too. So you're kind of getting back to how things were, if you will. So, again, let's introduce the fellas as we always do. JQ, right out the gate. My man, how you feeling this evening, sir?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. And I got a chance to get my homeboy Dre and Marcy some tickets to the Falcons game to come watch with me tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to that.
Really looking forward to it as well, man. Appreciate that as well. I mean, I don't even know how much I love, man. So it's going to be fun. So first time you meet Marcy, she is a character, so it should be fun for sure, man. So yeah, Leo's in the house. I'm looking forward to it.
There it is.
Rob Ford, how you feeling, bro?
Well, she put up with you, man. That's something special. Shout out to Marcy. But
I mean,
other than that, things
me,
are going
good.
Great.
Yeah, it's all good. Uh-huh. Keep it going, Rob.
Oh, everything's good. I'm ready to talk some sports. Let's get this party started.
Hey, man, she puts up me, but I am a unique specimen, man. So it's fun times, man. So again,
yeah,
unique. Ying to the yang, man. It's a fun time, man. So again, JQ, you'll see the side of her, man. She's gonna enjoy some alcohol, man. So it's hilarious, man. So you know, anyway.
Nice.
All fun, man. We got some Cat Daddy moonshine. It's fun, man. That's what we're coming to talk about.
Hey.
Oh, he comes out. Rob comes out firing, man. Trying to take those shots, man. But all you gotta do is calm him down and talk about the championship, man. So anyway, but it's all good. Hey, let's kick off this show and let's
talk
about.
Yeah, that real shut me up. I will admit that.
let's throw out the numbers really quickly.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's over. It's done with. We're moving on.
We on to Cincinnati.
That's still a sore spot for him, though, isn't it, JQ? He's still kind of sore about that,
yeah.
Right? He can't get over
it. Oh, no.
It's over and done with. Moving on.
Okay. All right. We'll see. We will see if you're really done and over with that. Really quickly, let's throw out the numbers to call into the show.
I still think it was a bad call, but
do.
The Saints blew some other opportunities, too.
Yeah,
moving on.
Here we go.
I mean, it doesn't change. It doesn't change what happened, but I'm moving on. I don't know if you're moving on,
Rob. I don't really know if you're moving on, man. That's all good.
No. Moving on.
Oh,
moving
man.
On like Maya.
You know, I didn't bring it up. You brought it up.
Moving on.
Oh my gosh. Dude, man, this is going to be a fun show already. I already know. Hey, really quickly, let's throw out the numbers. I've been trying to throw out the numbers for like 5 minutes here. But, again, if you do want to call in, the number to call is always the 424-243-9519. It's always the number 424-243-9519. Follow us on the Twitter, as they say. Don't get in trouble, you know, trying to, you know, hashtag and hit fact people. But if you want to follow us at the number 12, THMAN Sports, and last but not least, Facebook.com/12thMan Sports or Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Either or will get you to the desired location and destination. All right, let's kick it off. We were going to spend some time showing some love to, some Cowboy stuff, but we're going to kind of like taper a lot of that too. So we're going to have to like, I don't know how in depth we're going to talk about that, but let's talk about some predictions on Baker Mayfield's career and Daniel Jones's career. This is pretty interesting too. So I'm going to let you kick this off, Rob, because again, I like torturing you. So kick it off, bro.
Well, you know, I just thought this would be a little fun topic based on the comments that Baker Mayfield, you know, made on Daniel Jones. I mean, he did come back and try to clean it up a little bit. But I'll start with Baker Mayfield, and I think very highly of Baker Mayfield from a, I don't know about a, from an individual standpoint, but from a football player and a leader on the football field, I think he's a winner. And I think he will be the catalyst to help turn that Cleveland Browns organization around. So I think he is going to have a successful all-pro career at the quarterback position in Cleveland. You know, still kind of hard to say if he's going to win a Super Bowl or not, but I think he's going to be the guy that finally turns that quarterback position around. Since 1998, how many starting quarterbacks have Cleveland had? And that was, that's like 20 years, and they probably have had 80 starting quarterbacks since then in 20
years.
Yeah,
I'm stupid.
Yeah, I think he is the guy that's going to finally catapult that organization back to the playoffs, back into contention, and have an opportunity to compete for a Super Bowl. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he at least wins one in his career, and he'll have an all-pro career. Daniel Jones, I know he's looked pretty solid in the preseason. I mean, he had a little bit of fumbleitis in game two, but when you look at him in the pocket, throwing the football, very poised, very accurate with the football, quick decision maker in his first two preseason games. Obviously, like I said, he did, you know, fumble a couple of times in the game, but actually throwing the football, he looked very good. But it's still way too early for me to go against what I thought about him on draft night. And but I am gonna say he will eventually be a solid NFL starting quarterback. I'm not ready to say he's a Pro Bowl or Super Bowl winning quarterback yet, but I think he's a guy that could possibly start in the NFL for 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, and I agree with pretty much most of that. Yeah, I think Baker is a winner. You saw me drafting today. You know, that hurt my soul, but I was like, right now, that's the best thing I can do is take him right now. But, you know, you said it. He's a winner, and he's got that mix of confidence and moxie with a little bit of arrogance that I think you have to have out of your quarterback to actually go out there and lead the team and look them guys in the eye and say, hey, man, we're going to come out here and do it. They cannot stop us on this drive. We got to get it. Let's go get some points. And all of them will look at him like, you know what? Yep, we're going to do it. Not only because I can do my part that he's speaking to me about, but I know that he can do his part. And that, I think, is the biggest thing. And your offensive linemen and your wide receivers and your running backs and your tight ends look at you and say, you know what? That you right there can get it done. And I have this false bravado knowing good and well he can't throw the ball 5 yards straight, you know, if he needs to get through third and fourth. Like, when you know your quarterback can do that and make those kind of plays, it boosts everybody else up. The only thing that hangs over his head is that Cleveland curse, where they continue to spend money and trade wisely like they've done, going to get Kareem Hunt, you know, drafting Chubb, going to get OBJ, going to get Landry. Will they keep them together? Will they cheap out and be Cleveland and say, ah, we ain't got it? You know what I mean? Now you got a really good quarterback with no weapons. Like, that's the only thing I think that can maybe hurt him, or maybe he gets too big for Cleveland. Sometimes that happens. You know, I think he's going to be on that line, especially with that young group. If they have success, will it not go to his head, but will he kind of be like, you know what, Cleveland's too small for me. I need to be on the bigger stage. And not that he's wrong for that, but some guys just want to be in a Dallas or in an L.A. or New York. So I really do. I agree with you. I think he can really be a really good Pro Bowl kind of quarterback, and he don't need he don't have to have over the top weapons in order to make him look better. But if you give him a decent array of weapons, he can still elevate them. And if he has a special wide receiver and a decent run game, you know, watch out for him. I hate to say that because I want Cleveland to suck, but I think he might be a real deal.
I don't think that's an NFL problem, though. Guys wanting to move to a bigger market. That's more of an NBA problem than a baseball problem, in my opinion. You know, you've seen Peyton Manning stay in Indianapolis for a long time. You've seen Drew Brees in New Orleans for a long time. That doesn't seem to be an NFL problem, though. That's more of an NBA, Major League Baseball problem where guys want to go play in a big market. Football is big regardless of what market you're in. And so I think it'll be something to whereas the only way he wants out of Cleveland is he gets in a disgruntled situation. I don't think it'll be something to the standpoint of it's too big for him, I mean too small for him. That's just my opinion. To me, it's more of an NBA Major League Baseball problem.
More often than not, but you've seen other quarterbacks sometimes, you know, like you have a Brett Favre who's oversized. He played for a small, big team in Green Bay. But Baker's personality is different than Peyton Manning. I can see Peyton Manning being perfect in Indianapolis. He don't want all the rah-rah. You know, he wants to be cool and go about his work. Like, I think Baker wants a little bit more of both. He wants to party and he wants to go about his work. And it might, you know, they're embracing him. And it may work out. Don't get me wrong. It could absolutely work out. But I can see him being more of the personality of I've outgrown this place. Not that he's going to do that, but given the way that he kind of gives off his persona, I feel like he might be that kind of dude that might do that in the NFL. You're right. It's more or less more really an NBA problem more than anything else. But I can see him being one of those cats in the NFL and like, nah, man, I'm made for Broadway. You know what I mean? I'm made for Hollywood. I can see him doing that. And that just takes nothing away from his ability to lead the team to be a quarterback. But he just seems to me like he just always wants more. So I worry about that a little bit for him in Cleveland, but not enough to say that that's going to happen. But if it did happen, I wouldn't be like, oh, my God, I'm just so shocked. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't take me by surprise. And Daniel Jones, I agree. His sample size is too small. I think the Giants are just an historic organization. They're going to spend the money there in New York. They're going to try to find ways to go get the next OBJ, and they've already got Saquon. And, you know, fill that roster out around Daniel Jones. It's just, can he handle that New York media? Because not everybody's equipped to be a superstar every time they walk out the door because they got paparazzi and whole back pages in newspapers dedicated to your every move. That, to me, is going to be one of the biggest thing that Daniel Jones has to overcome is the fact that you can have no missteps. You can't be out there, you know, partying too hard, having chicks, you know, doing blow, whatever you decided you was going to do. You don't want to do that in New York where they're going to get paid to follow you around. But he has looked solid. I agree. Passing-wise, he looked very solid. You're absolutely right with the fumbles. But I think he still threw a touchdown pass in that game as well. So if he can block all that other stuff out and just focus on football, I think he's got a chance. But we've seen Baker now for a year. I think we have to come back to this conversation as we get a year Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Right. But I will say this. Based on early projections, I mean, Daniel Jones has looked better than Dwayne Haskins. And and to some degree, better than Kyler Murray, too. I mean, you look at his last game for Kyler Murray was really shaky. He had a solid, good drive in the first outing. But overall, and then we look at Drew Locke for Denver, he's been very erratic as well. So, I mean, overall, so far in these first couple of preseason games, from the quarterback position, he's been the most impressive rookie quarterback so far. But, like you said, I'm still not ready to say he's an all-pro or Super Bowl-winning quarterback yet.
And that's the problem he's going to have. You touched on it. All those other guys, you feel like Locke slips a little bit. But all the other guys, you almost feel like, okay, I can see them getting drafted there. The fact that Daniel Jones comes out of the blue all the way up into the first round like that is he's always going to be fighting. I mean, not always, but initially in his career, he's going to be fighting to overcome that. Like, well, see, they messed up. He shouldn't have been the first round. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to get that same benefit of the doubt the other guys are going to get, I think, just because of that. And it's a shame because it's not really his fault. But I agree with you. He's almost going to have to do a little bit more than everybody else to just kind of take that, you know, take the next step like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here. So I agree. Only time will tell with him, though. He needs another year for us to make up a real proclamation on him.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, too, just to kind of, like, you know, close the book on this because it's one of those situations where I both agree with you that, you know, definitely Baker does have all the tools, and like you said, the moxie, all that fun stuff. There is kind of that thin line, though. Whenever you're going too far, then you're going to end up like Johnny Manziel. You know, you can really, like, go too far. So you have to be really balanced. Yeah, and just kind of, you know, play that bear, too, because he seems to have, like I said, he's got enough of that moxie. You know, he's definitely embraced Cleveland, as you said. And you know, like you said, as Rob said, too, it's interesting because you can – do some things with that. You do wonder if he's reaching out to Daniel because, you know, maybe he's kind of like jealous, man, I should be in New York or something. Like, you know, something crazy like that because, like you said, you do think that he will kind of outgrow Cleveland. You can see that, you know. But, you know, he could be like Peyton and just kind of like, or even like a, you know, Brett Favre just like embrace the city. He can be a god there if he wanted to, you know what I'm saying? So he has to definitely be careful as far as where he is right now because – it's a thin line, bro. It's good to have confidence. It's good to have an ego and all that fun stuff, but, you know, just be careful. It's crazy because whenever you said the comment, Rob, about all the quarterbacks, listen, man, if I can, let me just throw out all the names of all the quarterbacks that Cleveland's had. This is since 1999. Tim Couch, Ty Detmer, Doug Peterson, Spurgeon Winn, Kelly Holcomb, Jeff Garcia, Luke McCown, Trent Dilfer, Charlie Fry, Derek Anderson, Brady Quinn, Ken Dorsey, Bruce Gradkowski, Colt McCoy, Jake Delhomme, Seneca Wallace, Brandon Wheaton, Thad Lewis, Jason Campbell. Remember Jason Campbell? Brian Hoyer. Yeah, obviously, Johnny Manziel, Connor Shaw, Josh McCown, Austin Davis, Cody Kessler, Robin Griffin III, Deshaun Kaiser, Kevin Hogan, and then obviously Tyrod Taylor, and then now the official Baker Mayfield. Man, that's a ton of quarterbacks, man. That's a ton of quarterbacks.
That's crazy.
That's since 1999.
You're talking about the D-list.
Just think the Patriots have had Tom Brady for 17 years. Well, 18 years now.
Right, that's insane.
Unbelievable.
The last quarterback that Cleveland had the one great one with Bernie Kosar for a minute, and then obviously they had kind of Vinny Testaverde and Mark Ripken, if you will. But that's crazy. That was the last turn of. They had Bernie for almost 10 years, but they went through a span of time 17, 18 quarterback. Anyway, that was crazy. I just want to throw that out there. I was looking that up too.
All right, guys.
Whoo! We don't talk a lot of Cowboys here because, I know Rob put this in there for Curtis and Gary, but I guess we have to kind of definitely talk about Jerry Jones and is he in control of the Zeke Elliott contract negotiations. And then he made a joke about, obviously, the contract with Jalen Smith. Let me get that attention. This is the contract. Y'all want to talk about contracts? This is the contract. But kind of what's the state, if you will, of Jerry Jones and the Cowboys? Not that we really care, but we do care. But go ahead, JQ. Pat, what do you think was happening? Obviously, because your boy Zeke is kind of there. So go ahead with that.
Yeah, when you've got a contract negotiation, I mean, and I don't know if you guys watched any of ESPN Get Up. I just happened to walk past when Jalen was talking to Mike Greenberg. He was like, you know what? If I was in a negotiation with the world leader and I turned on TV and you couldn't hear and said, Jalen who, I would feel some kind of way about that. And Greenberg was like, well, you know what? I get it when you put in those kind of terms. Like, if you're in a for real contract negotiation with Zeke, and you say that because the rookie looks somewhat good, but yeah, you've had my back, but I've shown it to you on the field to be able to be the engine that carries this offense. Like, even if you're joking, that's just, we're in the middle of this. It's not something that you should say. And I mean, and it further puts back the negotiations. Now, Jalen gets to the party first, right? And gets his money first. And you're still looking at Dak and Amari and Zeke looking like, bruh, okay, I guess. I mean, I think it's a decent deal for him. He's really, it pays him, I think, commensurate to what his ability is, and also amongst middle linebackers. But if you three are the high profile ones, and the fourth guy gets to the table before you do, and your owner does that, it almost is inviting Zeke has a lot of trading left on his tires. If I feel that way about Pollard, it might be uncomfortable. But if we mess around and go 2-3-0 with him as a running back, and he looks good, then Jerry is definitely in control of the negotiation. This all comes down to these first 2 or 3 games. I think what they've done now is dug in to a point of, what happens when the for real bullets start flying and the games are on the line and you don't have any? What is your record after 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks? Then we'll figure out who has the leverage.
Rob?
Well, I totally agree that I don't agree with those comments that Jerry Jones made about Zeke. I think that was the wrong message to send to Zeke Elliott.
I agree.
When he's been a star player on that team since he's been drafted by the Cowboys, I think that's the wrong message to send to Zeke Elliott. Do I think he's in control of the negotiation? I do think he's in control of the negotiation, but he needs to be careful. I think he needs to be real careful because this team is a 7-9, 8-18 without Zeke Elliott at best. They're a 7-9, 8-18 at best without Zeke Elliott. With Zeke Elliott, they have the potential to be a 13-3 team. I'm not saying they will go 13-3, but I think with them, they have a chance to be somewhere between 11-5 to 13-3. I think their defense has an opportunity to be one of the strongest in the league. And then also, with Zeke Elliott, that offensive line, Dak Prescott, some weapons on the perimeter now, they have a strong chance to be a Super Bowl contender. So I think he needs to be careful and to make sure that Zeke Elliott does come back to this ball club and he doesn't sit out the season like Le'Veon Bell did with the Steelers next year, last year, I'm sorry. Okay. They need Zeke Elliott on his football team. There's no doubt about it. He's, normally running backs don't have that big of an impact, but Zeke has that big of an impact on this organization. They need him desperately.
So, real quick, Troy, did you see the comments by Eric Dickerson? Eric Dickerson said the Cowboys are the Bengals without Zeke Elliott. And I read that and I said, you know, why you got to use us? But I'm like, you know, you talk about a Hall of Fame running back coming out there and saying that. He called them the Bengals without Zeke Elliott. I was like, wow, that's powerful. And you're right. I think the other piece of it, and I'll let you go, is that Jerry Jones, I think, is a little bit more controlled negotiations just because Zeke hasn't said anything. So when you have one party doing all the talking, they naturally, either for good, you know, generally for good, if they don't put their foot all the way in their mouth, have control of the negotiations because they're the only ones talking, right? You don't really hear anything from Zeke and his agent outside. We find it disrespectful. But they haven't come out and said this is the case that we're trying to make and have it be out there for public consumption to make another counter-argument to whatever Jerry does every day at his press conferences with the local reporters, right? So that's why I feel like he's more a little bit more of a control for that piece of it. But I think they just dug in now. Like, it's going to come down to what happens in the first couple of games to figure out who's really got the leverage. But I still give the point to Jerry because he's the only one talking.
Interesting. Now, I give the leverage a little bit to Zeke, man, because, again, like you said, because he hasn't said anything. But it's very interesting because if you think about it, and let's think about Jalen Smith. I think it's messed up because you got to be careful, Jerry Jones, because, again, Jalen Smith is a great cause of a guy getting a great contract because you know how he got hurt, you know, and the fact that he was getting a contract. That's amazing. That should be a great story, right? But now we're talking about how this and Zeke, it's just kind of messed up. It's like, man, you're taking away from a really, really good score and a really great contract. And then, oh, by the way, what about Zeke? And then it's like Rob said, you got to be very, very careful, man, because how does that look for Zeke? You're like, you know, Zeke who, that's not – I don't know if he's joking or not, but you don't do that. You do not piss off the best one, the best player in your squad. And like Rob said, you know, without Zeke, you're looking at, you know, 7-9 squad. You know, with Zeke, you have a powerful squad. I'm not going to say all that, but it's just – I agree with Rob. I mean, you have to be very, very careful with how, unless you're trying to, like, do some type of mind analysis or psychoanalysis, mind tricks like Bill Parcells. I mean, you got to be careful, man. And, again, am I upset about what's happening? No, not at all, because, you know, it's good to see Cowboys infighting. And, again, I'll always say that Jerry Jones will never win another Super Bowl because, you know, the fact you had a perfect coach with – well, not perfect. We had a great coach in Jimmy Johnson. You hated that Jimmy Johnson took all the limelight off of you. So that's why you fired him. And then you'll never be able to have that back again, man. Because Jimmy could have stayed there forever and could have managed to win Super Bowls. But no, Jerry wanted all the glory. So it's like, you know, no one's crying for you, Jerry, if you will, too, man. But like I said, disagree with you. Be very careful. Again, it's taken away from a great story with Jalen Smith. That's what I'm kind of upset about, man. Because you can't just do that. It's like there's too much infighting with that squad, man. That's not how you're going to win Super Bowl, man. So, again, that's my two cents, man. And I do think that Zeke has a lot of leverage, too. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, well, you talk about Jalen Brown. Yeah, he got an extension. I mean, he missed all his first season. He's been really impressive the last 2 years. That linebacker group for the Cowboys is really strong. The defensive line is strong. And their secondary has even gotten better, too. His defense has a chance to be a top-five defense in the National Football League. And, like I said, they have Zeke Elliott, and they play smart football, don't turn over the football. They're going to be a tough out. I mean, they can be a tough out if they have Zeke Elliott on this team. As much as I hate to say it, you all know how I feel about the Cowboys, but they could be really a tough out if they have him on this football team.
I just knew you were calling the Cowgirls. Yeah, when the Hall of Famer says you're the Bengals without this dude, I mean, I'm going to listen to Eric Dickerson. When a Hall of Famer calls your team the Bengals, if you don't have this certain dude from 13-3 to 7-9, the Bengals could be a 7-9 team. They are absolutely the Bengals. You just all agree to it if they don't have Zeke Elliott. When a Hall of Famer, Eric Dickerson, says that about you,
I'm sorry, JQ. They don't really have. They're trying to find that running back, bro, to take the place, man. I'm just saying, not since Corey Dillon, man. You got to bring that back, bro. Icky Woods, man. Icky.
I'm just saying.
Hey,
I'm gonna listen to the Hall of Famers. Hall of Famers know things.
There it is. We spent a lot of time talking about the Cowboy Girls, if you will, but let's kind of kick
it
to another topic here. I had to fill it in. And again, this is kind of getting a little overplayed here. Antonio Brown, the helmet dispute, And then also, is he still motivated? I'm a little nervous because I click him in the draft. And I'm like, eh, I was kind of going to the reference here. I was trying to go like a more strategy this time. So, but I'm hoping he's motivated. But Rob, is he motivated? I'm kind of scared.
Well, he's filed a second grievance in regards to the helmet issue. He's going to play regardless. And I think once he's on that football field, he is going to be motivated to play. I think he is happy to be in Oakland. I really do. And I think once he gets on the field, he will be happy to play. He has filed a second grievance in regards to the helmet issue. And I think that portion of Antonio Brown is very selfish. To me, that's just the bottom line. That's very selfish. I think he needs to move on with it. Obviously, the NFL has their reasons for wanting to, to go with the different helmets and things of that nature from a safety standpoint. And I think, what he's doing right now is very selfish and is taking too much attention from the rest of the team. So I think that from that aspect, it's selfish, and I think he needs to move on from that, even though he is filing a second grievance. But I do believe he's ultra-talented, and once he steps on the football field, he will be motivated, and I do believe he is happy to be there in Oakland. So I think when it's all said and done, he will be motivated to play, but he just got to get through this helmet issue and stop being selfish with it.
Well, you know what? I, as we were talking about, I had a crazy thought. But the first part of it is, you've seen Hard Knocks, right? He got, what, 3-4 kids? Oh, he needs that money. Make no mistake about it. And old girl's going to come for him for child support if he don't go out there and play. So if his motivation is not to get too paternity and to make sure his kids can keep having the lifestyle that he's trying to have for them, then he's going to get his butt out there and play, and that's where his motivation is going to come from. So I agree. I think the helmet thing is silly. Everybody else is okay with it except for you. But I guess it always has to be one martyr. That's how we get an Ali and whatnot, where somebody sometimes takes a stand and we maybe not always recognize his greatness in this moment. I don't think this is one of them, but, I reserve judgment for 5% of that saying maybe it is 50 years down the line. I don't think so, though. I think this is Antonio Brown being about Antonio Brown, but I think he's going to play. But the other piece of this is, and I throw this out there to you two, is it almost, as I thought about it, more a blessing in disguise for Derek Carr? Because we all know that this is a make or break season for Derek Carr. I think we all agree on that. We talked about it last week with him and Mariota and Winston. But we aren't talking about him, and whether it's for the most part, and whether it's make or break season out for him. We're talking about Antonio Brown and his helmet. And then if Antonio Brown decides to be distracted and things don't happen, how much blame does Derek Carr really get? Will it end up being about Antonio Brown making it about him and being selfish, and then Derek Carr gets another year to float until you say, well, you know what, he didn't have his number one receiver. They traded for him because he was a distraction, so we can't judge Derek Carr this year. So I wonder if Derek Carr is a piece of him sitting back saying, yeah, go on, Antonio Brown. I'm going to pay for your lawyers. You go ahead and you keep suing the NFL every chance you get about this helmet so people stop talking about me. So I know that's real conspiracy theorist on me, but like, or a piece of that to me is like Derek Carr is kind of going to get a free pass on this year either way because of what's happening with Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. That what if Antonio Brown is the distraction that Oakland is like we're handling our business. That's exactly what I was going to say, JQ. That he's kind of there just to take the pressure away from Derek Carr and things like that too, man. So again. If that's the case, then well played, Antonio Brown. But we have to get the season to see exactly what's going to happen too, man. So, again,
well played.
He made the trip to Winnipeg. I know the Raiders took off for Winnipeg today. They're playing the Packers in preseason game in Winnipeg. So he got on the plane. So we'll see if he plays this week. But he did get on the plane to Winnipeg to go play the game in Canada this week against the Packers.
Who the hell plays in Winnipeg? Why?
Yeah.
Winnipeg?
A preseason game.
I'm not trying to go to Winnipeg if I'm an NFL player. I know they were tired. They looked at the schedule and said, man, this is some BS. Why are we playing any game in Winnipeg? They
got why not Toronto or Vancouver?
Right. Winnipeg?
Somebody's
Calgary, sorry. Yeah. We're in Montreal.
Well, you have to get some exposure,
again,
Rob. I don't know. Maybe more exposure. I don't know. There's not really a
NFL got enough exposure?
I don't know, JK. I'm trying to think of something, okay? Somebody don't take a chance. I'm just trying to say. Let's talk about what we don't know. We don't know what's going on. What's going on with Roger Goodell?
My bad.
Head.
Don't shoot the messenger. You're right.
That's crazy.
Man, right. I don't know. I'm going to make the assumption that Green Bay is the home game team in that matchup. So maybe it's the Packers trying to build their fan base.
Again,
I think preseason games is really up to the teams itself. So, yeah.
That's the Packers. That's not the Bengals trying to build their brand. That's the Packers. I think they're going to be okay with their fan base. I'm just going to put that out there.
Oh, man. They need some more cheese heads, JQ, man. The more the merrier, man. It's already cold, man. So. They got to keep it going, man. They can identify. Hey,
I'm sorry. I'm in.
I love it. No, it's all good. 29 minutes here. It's good that we have enough time to talk about these topics. I love it. I'm gonna talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. Will he live up to his contract? You know what? It's kind of crazy because I would have to say before he got injured, I was gonna say yes, but I think the injury has a huge impact. It's very questionable, man, right now. He has not looked good in preseason at all. I think he did like 5 interceptions, something crazy like that. He's been having interceptions in practice. So I don't know if it's confidence, just whatever. If it continues on this path, it's not looking good for Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know it's easy to kind of make fun of him, but it's tough, man, because I think he was playing well. And I think, again, due to the injury, it's definitely affected him, man. So that's my thoughts. And I don't know if you want to add anything else to that, JQ Robinson, you guys, man, as well.
Well, I was just saying, I think Rob probably is going to end up agreeing with me is, I mean, he just came off of ACL. I don't know how great we expected him to look with the bullets flying and live action and preseason coming off and that being his first action. Like, it's good for him to get it right now as opposed to not getting it in week 2. You know what I mean? Where those games actually mean something. But, you know, you come off that kind of injury, you know, you're talking about timing, you haven't worked out with the receivers as much, and now you got Deebo Samuel, who I think is going to be good for them, and they got another star in there, not star, but another good young talent to put with Pettis and Goodwin, and, you know, and then you get Coleman from Atlanta. Like, it takes time. It's a timing thing, especially with quarterbacks, you know, to figure out how guys cut on a 10-yard out and on a fly pattern and a deep go. Like, you just don't say, okay, you call the plays and you get that timing immediately. Everybody runs their routes a tad bit differently. So, getting used to the blocking and people rushing at you and then for real, you know, getting hit in your legs, especially when you have a knee injury, I think it just takes a little time to get over it. I'm not going to say he's not going to live up to it just based off what I've seen in the preseason. I think making him, what is he, the fifth or seventh top paid quarterback in the league this year, I mean, that's going to be hard until the next wave of quarterbacks pass him up. But, you know, I'm a reserve judgment on his performance on the field right now just due to rust. He just hasn't played enough yet.
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, he ended the 2017 season winning the last 5 games. They won 5-0, and he was really impressive in those games. And so if you ask me that question at the end of the 2017 season, I would say yes. I mean, I was thoroughly impressed with what he did, and I thought going into the 2018 season that, you know, we were going to see more of that and that the 49ers could have at least been like a 500 team, maybe have an outside chance of getting to 9-7 last year. But prior to the injury last year, he was looking shaky. And, I mean, he came out, started the 2018 season looking rough in those first few games before he got hurt. And so I'm almost going to say I don't think he's going to live up to that contract. And we look at the preseason game the other night. What was he, 1 of 6 with 0 yards with a 0.0 quarterback rating? Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. 1 for 6, 0 yards on that one completion, and a zero quarterback rating.
And he threw a pick.
Like
but again,
I said, yeah, yeah. But going in,
that,
I mean,
that,
like I said, after the 2017 season, I would say yes. But he was shaky last year prior to the injury. And so that's what really concerns me as well. And now he is coming off of an ACL, as JQ pointed to as well. So to me, that makes it even more questionable. And, I mean, you know, I'm not rooting for anything bad for Jimmy G, but I'm going to say he's not going to live up to that contract.
Yeah, that's fair. All
right. It's relative, though, right? Because if you get these next waves of quarterbacks and they contract the seed here, as he goes from 7th to 15th, and he's almost like paid like Andy Dalton or something like that, then is he really not living up to the contract? So in the guys of it right now, today – maybe not, but I feel like his contract is not going to be when you look at, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he got that in the next 1 or 2 years. He's going to be, like, in the middle of the pack. I really do.
Good call. All right, we're moving right along here. Let's do a quick thing. We're about 24 minutes here in the show. We're having some good times. Let's talk about the quick update as far as the Marlins and the Braves. After a interesting first game in that your boys hit freaking Acuna, man. Acuna Jr., man, you talk about just hot, man. We were hot, man, about that, man. But I get it, man.
He's 2-2 on that one.
Not on that one,
baby. I don't know. I've heard a lot of things. He's like a jerk, man. I've heard. I don't know. It's kind of crazy, man. I don't know. But obviously, we were able to pull it off tonight. 5-1 win. That's maybe Rob can comment on that, man. Because I don't know. Everyone's you've heard like some good and bad about Mont. He's kind of known as a jerk. But let's see the Braves handle their business. And a shout out to Alex Anthopoulos, man, making some really great moves, man. Realizing that Camargo was struggling. Getting Adonis Hecheria from the Mets, who was on the freaking whatever, claimed him. Mm-hmm. They actually claimed Rafael Ortega as well. He hits a freaking grand slam. It's like so far he's making like all the right moves, man. So you're like, what? I mean, it's been pretty impressive, you know, for the least to say the least, too, man. So and then the bullpen is finally the kind of adjusted. Chris Martin, Shane Green, Mark Malakia, whatever his name is. We've all been making some good the bullpen is actually looking like the bullpen that we had hoped to have. So again, they've kind of settled in, and we'll see what's going to happen too, man. So again, we got to take a shot, man. So I'm excited. What you got on that? JQ.
That Atlanta offense, and I said it again, that Atlanta offense is dumb. When you look at it from top to bottom, you started off, you got Acuna and Alves and Freddie, and you get those other guys, him and Donaldson, him behind them. Like, there are no easy outs. Maybe Flowers, even once in a while, he gets a hold of one. That offense is ridiculous. It's all about the Atlanta pitching staff and with those young guys like Soroka and Freed, and can you get Tehran to be
Ian Anderson, we'll talk about him too as well. Yeah,
he's too young. He's not ready for that yet. He needs another year, I think, of seasoning personally. They may call him up once the roster is stranded to 40. September, but you can kill a young pitcher's confidence if you call him up too soon and he goes up there and he gets shelled. So I think they need to be
really
more protective of Ian Anderson.
Tell me real quick about Pache and about Roderick Waters too. And I know you've been watching them too, so just when you get a second too. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that I think that was the right call up, but I still don't think those guys also are ready. Just because you strike gold with Acuna and Alves doesn't mean everybody you have in your organization is ready to make that next step and jump a level. I think Pache and Waters they have times where they look good in AAA and have times where they struggle because it's not AA anymore. You know what I mean? I think they are where they need to be right now. Maybe going into next year and they start making some progress, if you start them off in AAA, maybe you can pull them up. I don't think at this particular point in time, the Braves getting Billy Hamilton from the Royals as just a defensive specialist and a base running threat in the late innings, his speed. You don't play him all the whole game, but if you need to pinch run or a defensive a double switch, that's an outstanding move for the Braves to make, and if they use him correctly. The Rams were trying to use him as an everyday player. That's not who he is. So when you extend those rosters to 40, you're able to use him more wisely. But it's going to come down, it's going to come down to Atlanta pitching. Does the starting pitching hold up, and can that middle relief and back end hold up and keep that offense where they don't have to score 10 runs every game, where 6 runs is enough where they win 6-3 as opposed to losing 8-6?
Anything to keep Rob's keep Rob going is always my excitement.
Hey, I put it in the topic, so I mean, come on. All I gotta say is Ron Acuna. I mean, two run home runs, and hey, the Braves still got a 6-game lead over the Nationals in the NL East, second best record in the National League behind the Dodgers. All you can do is give yourself an opportunity get into the tournament. And you have an opportunity. You never know what can happen. I know the Dodgers are the clear favorites in the National League, but like I said, you get into the tournament, you never know what's going to happen. You give yourself an opportunity there. So the Braves are right there in the thick of things.
Yeah.
Good call. All right, man, let's have some fun. And like I said, you nailed it right on the head, Jake. And I'm glad that you put us straight to, because everyone's like, well, is Pache ready? Is what? We're like, no, we don't quite think they're ready. And Ian Anderson, he's been amazing, like you said too. But you don't want to mess up the confidence. Definitely going into next year, so you do just enough moves to get us to, obviously hopefully to the postseason and see where we're going to go from there too, man. So we're excited about that. Hey, 20 minutes left in the show here. We're going to show some love to Rob here. And just my little side note, it was great to see the Braves win versus the Dodgers. That was a huge series for them to take 2-3, man. That was fantastic, man. So good for them to kind of handle the business, man, even starting off kind of shaky. Clayton Kershaw passes Sandy Koufax on the all-time win. Let's go ahead, Rob, on this.
Yeah, obviously Clayton Kershaw, you know, has been a Dodger ace for quite some time now. And, you know, Sandy Koufax was known as the ultimate Dodger ace for quite some time. I mean, Kershaw just got 166 victory to pass Koufax. And so, I mean, like I said, you know, Koufax's career was cut short with some arm injuries and things of that nature. He could have gone on to had a lot further success, but he had to retire at the age of 30. But that being said, Kershaw is now the fifth winningest pitcher in franchise history. He's trailing only Don Sutton, Don Drysdale, Daisy Vance, and Brickyard Kennedy. Names from the past. But Kershaw is right now in a four-way tie for 25th place wins for pitchers through their first 12 season in Major League Baseball history. So obviously a tremendous start. You like to see him have the success in the postseason. He still hasn't quite had that yet. But you know, as far as regular season wins, he's one of the best pitchers of all time. And now, like I said, passing the Dodger legend and Sandy Koufax, a tremendous feat. And congratulations to Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, you took exactly what I was going to say. I mean, we all know that Clayton Kershaw is a stud, but he will always, always be remembered, whether good or bad. And he still has time to rewrite some of his postseason history about what he does in the postseason, because he's as good as he is in the regular season, he is almost just that bad in the postseason. And you don't want to have your career say, yeah, he was good, but yeah, but. And right now, I feel like we're at the yeah, but stage with Clayton Kershaw. He's almost had to reinvent himself. I don't know if it's, you know, learning a different pitch, taking a little bit off the heater, but, you know, adding another, taking a little bit off of his changeup, adding another pitch to that arsenal to make him more dominant in the postseason where you get rid of that yeah, but. And to me, that's just where he is. He's phenomenal, and there's no question about it. And if he keeps up, he can still, even without the postseason success, end up with his arm, his body holds up, and his back especially holds up where he can pitch, you know, 3 to 5 more years to get that win total up some more. I don't know if he's ever going to reach 300 wins, not just because of his injury history. But he's, you know, he's got a fully loaded offense in L.A., and they're going to keep him around as long as he stays healthy in terms of being able to rewrite some of that history in the postseason. But that's really where he is for him right now, is erasing his postseason failures in the past and giving himself, you know, that Luther Vandross, that one shining moment here in the postseason. He definitely needs it. And that's just where he is.
Sing it, Andre.
I'm doing it. I ain't going to do that. Nah, man. Let's move on here really quickly. Let's talk about the top 5 quarterbacks into college football this season. And this will probably dive as well into our ACC and SEC and Big Ten predictions as well, too, man. Hopefully we don't have, Curtis and Gary to give it the Pac-12 or the Pac-10 or whatever you're going to call it. But, again, I digress. So going into this college football season, Rob, I'll let you take this, and obviously we'll jump into the ACC or the SEC predictions, if you will. So go ahead, sir.
Well, of course I cheated a little bit. I wound up going with 7. But I wanted to I wanted to put 2 quarterbacks in there.
You make the topics. How are you going to cheat after you make the topics? Just make the top 7 quarterbacks as the topics. How are you going to put 5 and then do 7?
Because I put together topics and then I do my homework after I do the topic. So maybe I should do it the other way around.
I mean, you think?
But that is a valid point. But I think you might like what I'm about to say here, JQ. So just listen up here. But
all right, I'm sorry.
but I do have 2 quarterbacks that are going to be first year starters this year. And in my 6th and 7th spot, and I'm gonna go 7 down. Number 7, I'm going with Justin Fields for Ohio State. I think he will have that kind of an impact right from the jump in that program. I mean, I don't know if he's a Dwayne Haskins type. He might be more of like a Braxton Miller type or a Terrence Pryor type. But I think he's going to have a big time impact on Ohio State offensively this year. And I think, you know, They're not going to miss a beat, and we'll get into that into our Big Ten predictions here in a little bit. But they're not going to miss a beat with Justin Fields at the quarterback position. He can throw the football, he can run, yeah. So he's going to diversify that offense tremendously. and probably even more diversified than they were last year with Dwayne Haskins. So that's going to be real interesting to see. Number six, another former Georgia quarterback, Jacob Eason, going to Washington. Now, right now, I got a second-round grade on Eason going into the draft next year. But Eason has got a big-time arm, And prior to him getting hurt and Jake Fromm taking over that spot, he was playing tremendously well. I think he had like 16 touchdown passes in four or five games. So he was playing really well prior to him getting hurt. So he's going to have to carry that Washington program. And if he comes out after this year, I have him as a second-round grade. But with his arm strength, his arm talent, if he can improve his accuracy a little bit more, cut down on the turnovers, he has a chance to move into the first round. I really believe that. So watch Jacob Eason. I have him number six in Washington. And then number five, I'm going to go with the current Georgia quarterback, Jake Fromm. You know, a lot of NFL scouts compare Fromm that he has Drew Brees' ability from a pocket awareness standpoint, from, a football IQ standpoint, and his arm strength is somewhere around Drew Brees. So a lot of scouts are comparing him to him, and most scouts have him as a first-round grade going into the draft if he comes out after his junior year. So I have him at the number five spot. Number four, Sam Ehlinger, Texas. He's going to have to really carry this football team. The only concern here with Ehlinger this year, the offensive line for Texas looks really shaky. Their quarterback and their skill positions and their secondary is strong. That offensive and defensive line still need some major work, so that is a concern for Texas, and that could be a concern for Ehlinger, with that offensive line in front of him. But, throwing the football, running it, he's got the versatility as well. He could be that guy. He's going to have to be the guy to carry that team, especially with their lines. Their lines are going to have to mature after the first couple of weeks of the season. Justin Herbert, Oregon. Now, he has an opportunity. Him either Tua would be the number one pick in this coming up draft. And Oregon has got a real strong chance to win the Pac-12, and we'll get into that to their predictions here. But he's a guy that could have been highly picked if he came out last year as well. Next, of course, Tua Tagovailoa. I know I'm mispronouncing his name. I don't care. Tagovailoa.
Just call it Tua.
But let's just say Tua. But he's another guy. He can run. He can also throw the football. He's very accurate. He's smart as well. He's in that conversation for the number one pick here in the 2020 draft. And number one quarterback, he's only a sophomore, Trevor Lawrence. He's not draft eligible going into next season. But he is the best quarterback in this draft. You saw last year he got better and better in every game he played. And he is the quarterback. He might be the best quarterback to come in the draft when he comes out in 10 years. And, exactly. So he's got that kind of arm talent, that kind of ability. NFL scouts are drooling over this kid already. He is that guy. And he may be the best NFL quarterback prospect to come out since Andrew Luck did in 2012. So he's got that kind of ability, that kind of arm talent. And he's already, as a sophomore, in my opinion, the best quarterback in college football.
He is from Cartersville, right, Dre? Trevor Lawrence?
Yes, he is.
He's from Georgia,
yes,
I know that.
And,
Yeah, he's from Cartersville.
Yep, Cartersville, yep. That's crazy. Like, somebody that DJ actually knows him personally, which is crazy. Because he's like, what's up, Trevor? I'm like, what? It's pretty cool. It's a small world.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can't really argue with those. I can't argue with six of them. I'm still reserved judgment on Jacob Eason. I'm not truly sold on him quite yet. But he's going back home, and maybe that's what he needs. Some dudes need to go away from him. Some dudes need to come back home, and it may work out for him. But if I had any two to fill those spots, and it kind of leads into my Big Ten talk, I like that kid, Adrian Martinez from Nebraska. And I know he still, has some things to prove. But if you watch Nebraska towards the end of last year, I think they won four of the last five. He was playing really good. He's a good dual threat. He can throw the ball. Scott Frost, I think, is now finally maybe able to use that magic at Nebraska, at a Big Five program. And it may not be Tom Osborne's Nebraska, but still a Nebraska program that still has some ringing in the ears when you go into a dude's household and his dad's like, yeah, I remember when Nebraska was just killing the Big Eight. It was the Big Eight back then. So I like Martinez to maybe slide into that Eastern spot, but the other ones I can't cope with. Of course, I'm rooting for Justin Fields, but I got to leave him out of that top five because we just haven't seen him do it yet.
That's a good call, man. We'll see how that plays out, man. No Jalen Hurst or anything like that. You know, we'll see how he, you know, it's Oklahoma. I'm curious to see how he plays as well. Hey, gentlemen, we got about 10 minutes left in the show here. So did you do your SEC predictions, Rob, with that as well or no?
Oh, yeah. Real quick on the SEC predictions. I'm start with the SEC East. I think Georgia's still that team in the East, and I think they're still that team that's, you know, knocking on the door as well. And I forgot to put in the predictions, and maybe we can squeeze this in as well, our national championship and college playoff prediction as well.
Let's do it next week.
Do that on the top. Yeah, we can do it next week. That's fine. But yeah, I still got Georgia in the East. Jake Fromm, Georgia's going to be strong on both line of scrimmage, the offensive line and defensive line, and they have talent. DeAndre Swift at the running back position, they're going to be really strong again this season and have an opportunity to compete for the SEC title and possibility in the college football playoff again. Florida, Felipe Franks has been really sharp. He had a really good spring game. He's been really sharp in training camp as well, and they have some talent at skill positions too. So they're going to be second place. I don't think they're going to be as good as Georgia just yet, but I think it should be an intriguing matchup. The largest outdoor cocktail party. Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
so, but, and I,
you
and
can't
I
call it
gap,
that. You can't
so.
Call that anymore.
It's always
going to
be the cocktail party. I don't care what they say. It's always going to be the cocktail party. You need to stop that and get over it and just call it what we all say. It's a cocktail party. I'm sorry.
I agree. After those two teams in the East, I think it's a big drop-off. I think Missouri will be that number three team with Kelly Bryant, but I think they're, it's a good bit of a drop-off from Florida and Georgia and Missouri. And then they got South Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. Kentucky had a really good year last year, but they lost a lot of senior leadership off that team. They had a very veteran president team last year. Obviously, you lose Josh Allen, you're a top defensive player as well. So I think you're going to see some drop-off there with the Kentucky Wildcats. Yeah, absolutely. The SEC, Alabama, is still the team to beat. They have Tua. They have the best quarterback in the conference. They're going to be a tough out. Of course, they got Judy at the wide receiver position as well. So they're going to be really tough. You know, Nick Saban's going to have a tough defense. This LSU team might be one of the best LSU teams we've seen in a while. They're still going to come up short to Alabama, but I have them second. Joe Burrow, they got some really good receivers.
That's a surprise.
They're going to be really good on defense. They have a 3-4 picks players that should go in the first two rounds on defense as well. So they're going to be really strong, but they're still going to come up short behind Alabama. Unfortunately, in the SEC West, Texas A&M, I have them three. Auburn going with the true freshman at quarterback, but they still have a lot of talent everywhere else. But I think that could be the difference. You know, I think the quarterback's going to go through some growing pains, you know, starting as a true freshman in the SEC. Then we got Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Arkansas rounding out the SEC West.
I can't find any flaws with what he just said. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that cocktail party is going to be the thing. I think LSU, they play Florida every year in that cross-divisional matchup, right? West to East,
yep.
They play Florida. That may end up being maybe a swing game between them being second or third. It's the only thing I would say about his rankings that he just laid out. But everything else, I agree 100% with.
Very nice. Yeah, I agree as well. Here we go. So we got 6 minutes here. We're going to kick it up to the – I'm going to save the Clemson's best team of all time. I'll talk about my ACC predictions, if you will. So, again, just surprise, surprise, man. It's going to be Florida State. No, I'm just joking. Everyone knows Clemson's going to be the number one team, obviously, because they're just the ish, apparently, according to everything and what we talked about and just reloading, if you will. So kudos to them. It's going to be interesting as far as, you know, you talk about that, the same thing Rob said, you know, because obviously you have – you know, Willie Taggart, man, I'm hoping the brother does something, man, because, again, you talk about a huge disappointment from all the Florida State fans. I know you don't, but I'm just saying, it's just like, man, it's just one of those situations, too, from the Atlantic, man. Then, obviously, it's just kind of jumbled, man. The only other squad that you had that's ranked in the top 20, 25 AP poll was the Syracuse. So, again, I've heard some people talk about them that they're overrated too. So again, you know, something to think about too as far as that. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with Syracuse. That's what you've been hearing too. So obviously, that's what we're looking at. I will talk about, you know, deep down in my heart, I've always been a fan of like, I just like love like the patterns and the history of like Miami and the Hurricanes, all the fun stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
My younger self. So you mm-hmm. hope that they would actually do something. Again, as far as I know, they got like the young quarterback. They got, I think it's Jaren Williams, if you will. So they've got a lot of squad, man. So a lot of talent. So hopefully, some way, somehow, I can get a turnover chain for both you and myself, Rob, and everyone like that, so we can all have some fun with that. But again, it's just good to see like certain squads. Isn't it good for college football to see like Miami do some things? I know it goes back to, you know, Ohio State versus Miami. No offense to Maurice Claret, if you will, but you know, remember those like those old, like, those great games, man. So you know, again, just one of the situations too. But again, obviously, I'm looking at your. Just if I'm gonna do the predictions, everyone knows that Clemson's gonna be number one. I'm kind of on the outside looking in as far as Syracuse. I don't know what's gonna happen with Florida State. Everything else is everyone else is looking down. Louisville's gonna be down. NC State, Wake Forest is obviously the bottom. That's just for the Atlantic. For the Coastal, again, you're thinking that it should be the Hurricanes taking that top spot with Carolina. Again, we're figuring out what's going to happen between Virginia Tech and Virginia. Pittsburgh's going to round it out. I'm really, really hoping that Georgia Tech is not last. I'm going to hopefully doesn't say that they're going to be like before Duke. but I'm really just – that's just me just being optimistic here. But I am going to say that I am happy that they are finally getting a really legitimate offense. And I'm happy that Jeff Collins is actually getting some great recruits, man. So, again, not saying that we're going to, you know, get our asses kicked this year, but I am happy as far as the transition. But, again, it was just exciting to see that too. But we're getting some great recruits. We're getting a recruit from Notre Dame, transferred in, Miles Sims from Michigan. I know you don't really care about that, JQ, but we're getting him. We got the guy from Miami, Ezard. We got a cat, Antonius Clayton, from Florida. So we're getting all these people that are coming back that are originally from Georgia – but coming back to Georgia Tech. So it's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen. So, again, I know Rob hates to hear this, but I am excited to, again, see the future of the squad, man. So, you know, future looks bright. Right now, Clemson is clearly the class of the division, the class of all of college football, too. So the only thing is that you have to worry about them beating themselves. I don't think they're going to be undefeated. I think they're going to trip up somewhere because, again, not because they can't win, but just because they're going to run into a trap game. That's just me. But, I mean, again, they – you know, right now, until that happens, you know, they're the top squad. So there you go. That's my thoughts.
I feel like this. Two things. It's almost like Clemson is New England with that AFC East. And you're looking at it like, come on, man. And I know Rob can sympathize, you know, with LSU. And the SEC gets a lot of the benefit of the doubt for having that strength of schedule. But I'm wondering, does Clemson get that Ohio State treatment where it was like Ohio State, but it was nobody else in the Big Ten? It's like they aren't getting challenged every year. Of course they're going to run through that schedule. I wonder if they get any of that same treatment because, of course, for a crazy talent, they should win that division. They should go undefeated. But you look around, they're like, who's their second and third best team that can really push them?
No.
They get that same
There's no one there. Hey, hold that thought, JQ. Go ahead and set it up, Rob. We're at 150-something. Go ahead and set up the OT portion, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great edition with Talking Sports with 12th Man. We apologize for the slight edit this week. We initially said we were going to be on Tuesday. We moved it to tonight on Wednesday night. But next week we'll be back on the air on Tuesday night. Tuesday night will be 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You don't want to miss it. As JQ alluded to, we're going to have our national championship and college playoff football predictions. We have our conference predictions tonight. We'll get those in. We still have three more NFL division predictions to get to. We'll get to those next week as well. And we'll get to our NFL playoff and Super Bowl predictions also on next week as well. So we'll wrap up our NFL predictions on next week. So you don't want to miss it. We got a lot going on in the sports world. Major League Baseball getting close to the stretch run here as well.
Yep.
So we'll be covering that. You don't want to miss it. Join us on next Tuesday night, people. We get ready to go to our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you that portion of the show live. Click on the same link tomorrow. You get the rest of our college football predictions. You don't want to miss it. Good night, people.
Yeah, we appreciate you, folks. And I just want to push it next week. Just, you know, just give them a little tidbit this week, and then we get into the final four next week. You know, you got to make it be a progression kind of thing. Hey, I appreciate y'all listening to the show and downloading it. Hit us up. Let us know what you think about what we're talking about. And as always, we love you and talk to you next week. Good night.
And stay tuned for some pictures, too, from the game tomorrow. We're going to have some fun getting a chance to see JQ, myself, and the Rowdy Bunch, if you will, man. So you may catch us with something fun to drink, if you will, man, because it's a celebration, bitches. Let's have some fun. Anyway, let's move on to the OT portion, if you will. That's always a joke, man. I always think of, like, Rick James. Let's
celebration.
Finish up your thought, too. Finish up your thoughts about you were talking about, you know, pretty much like it's going to, you know, Clemson's going to kind of have the same fate as Ohio State. There's not really anyone to challenge them, too. Like I said, the only squad that you thought was, well, that was that ranked is Syracuse. But, again, we don't know about Syracuse. You're hoping, again, I'm talking about the Miami, that they're going to, you know, again, have some challenge. We just don't know. It's kind of like we don't know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, their talent is there. Luke Taggart, you know, but, again, finish up thought.
Yeah, and my only point about it, and I'll let you jump in here, Rob. I know you probably feel somewhat because you got the SEC behind you in terms of the strength of schedule and the national notoriety. I really feel like Clemson, just because of how good they are and the fact that they have been so good for the past couple of years, that they'll maybe be able to skip across that. But I wonder, as these weeks go along, well, they people look at the ACC and say, you know what, there's nothing really happening in the ACC besides Clemson. So how good is their schedule? How have they been tested? How good are they really are? Are they as good as we think they are, because they're just destroying people because the ACC is down? I wonder if they will get any of that, or will we still stay in love with Trevor Lawrence? And nothing's anything wrong with it, because Trevor Lawrence is a fantastic quarterback and Dabo Swinney is a fantastic coach. But will they get any of that sort of pushback when they see what happens with ACC and the other ACC games? Like, man, these guys are just not a good team. And you talk about Syracuse. Syracuse snuck up on people last year. And I want the brothers to do well on Syracuse, don't get me wrong. But they don't have that element of surprise this year. People are game playing like, you know what, Syracuse is on the schedule, and you can say all the stuff you want to. They'll mess around and come in here and beat us. They have our full attention this week. We know they can do that to us, where last year I don't think people thought. They were like, oh, that's Syracuse. We can sleep through it. Just put our uniforms on. When we beat them, not so much. So I think that element of surprise that's taken away kind of, to me, is more of a regression to the mean for Syracuse. I think Clemson far and away wins the ACC, though.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I don't think it's going to be close. I don't think I think Clemson is going to run away in every game in the ACC this year. I mean, they're the only ACC team that's top 20 football team. So this is from top to bottom. It's not going to be a very strong conference this year. This is kind of going to be like the 2013 Florida State team, where they just bulldozed through the entire ACC conference. And I kind of see this this Clemson team doing the same. Now, they do have to replace a lot of studs on defense, but they have some guys ready to step up, man. They're recruited really well. They got a lot of five-star recruits. Trevor Lawrence and the offense is going to be a beast to deal with. Offensive line is strong. They're going to be a tough out. I know they're preseason ranked number one right now. But they're going to run through, in my opinion, the ACC. I think every other team in the ACC will have at least two losses this year. So Clemson will go undefeated, and every other team in the conference will have at least two losses, in my opinion. To me, Miami is going to be the second-best team in the conference. Watch Virginia. They're another one to watch, but I think Miami is going to be the second-best team. And you will see a Miami-Clemson opportunity for the ACC championship game. Miami's best hope is that if they can beat Florida this coming Saturday night in the non-conference matchup, and if Miami can at least hang in there and only lose one game in the ACC during the regular season, then that ACC championship game could mean something for Miami and Clemson at the end of the year. But this Miami-Florida matchup is going to be huge this Saturday night for Miami to be in that conversation. So we'll kind of see if they can pull that off, upset off. Syracuse, agree. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but do you think Miami is going to beat Florida on Saturday? Because I don't. And I wish that I could say that I do. Okay.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm saying that's the only hope, is that they find a way to pull off the upset. But, no, I don't think they will. I really don't. Syracuse, I agree. I think they take a slight step back this year. I think they take a slight. But I think Florida State finds a way to be in second place in that Atlantic Division behind Clemson. So I think Willie Taggart and that team have too much talent for them not to be at least second place in that division behind Clemson. But I still think they'll be a distant second. I think Syracuse will be third place. I know a lot of people are predicting them second. But I think they'll be a third-place team in that Atlantic Division. But like we said, I think Clemson is a runaway winner with this conference.
Mm-hmm.
Good call. All right, JQ, this is what we've been waiting for. This is what you're waiting for. Big Ten predictions, bro. All you, man.
Man, we know who you're going to predict. We're wasting our time.
Hey, listen. You'll be no different if you had a Clemson fan. If you had a Clemson fan in here on the podcast talking about the ACC, right? I'm gonna be honest. So I'm gonna start with the Big Ten West. I think it's three teams. I think it's Nebraska. I think it's Northwestern. I think it's Wisconsin. But I look at Wisconsin. Hornibrook wasn't great for them, but now he's now playing for that Florida State team we just talked about with Willie Taggart. Thorson has left Northwestern and has been drafted. But that dude I talked about, Adrian Martinez, is still there with Scott Frost in Nebraska. And Rob can attest to it. Whenever I get close in terms of teams of who I think is going to be good, what do I go to? I go to who I think has the best quarterback. And I think Nebraska has the best quarterback. And they both play the same kind of round-robin schedule. But that Northwestern schedule is brutal this year. They've got a four-game stretch that is just stupid. And I need to look it up. But I believe they start off with Northwestern in their first game. And then outside of that, they go to – hold on, give me a quick second for Northwestern. They have Michigan State, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and then Ohio State in four straight weeks. That is a brutal run for Northwestern in terms of a Big Ten. I'm trying to have a Big Ten defending Big West championship run. With the new quarterback, you know, I like Pat Fitzgerald as a coach. I think he's a really good coach with limited resources at Northwestern. They're basically the Notre Dame of the Big Ten in terms of academics, but it's hard to get, you know, what you want athletically. Sometimes they're a very high academic institution. You can ask Duke about that in football as well. So I would take them and put them third. I know a lot of people are picking Nebraska, and it makes it hard for me to pick Nebraska because I don't like to follow the trend. But we saw what Scott Frost could do at Central Florida. Now he gets that Nebraska machine. There is nothing else in Nebraska but University of Nebraska football. So he's got all the resources they're going to try to throw at his disposal to bring them back somewhat close to that Tom Osborne era. I think this may be the year they, after that rough start last year, they get back to it. I just like Nebraska in the Big Ten West. And for me, in the Big Ten East, it's always the same four. It's Ohio State. It's that team up north. It's Michigan State. And it's Penn State. But Penn State has now lost Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley. I think it's going to be tough in this year to rebound, given what those other three teams have. But I don't know if you remember last year, but that Michigan State-Oregon game was horrible to watch. It was like 9-7 or something really ridiculous like that, and it wasn't even that good of a game. So I have a hard time with a struggling offense putting them in that realm with that team up north and Ohio State in terms of what they're going to be able to do. Maybe they may be able to match them in the first half defensively, but, you know, it's hard to keep a good offense down, and I think they're going to lose both those games. So it comes down to the game between those two in Ann Arbor this year. And I know I'm biased, and I'm always going to pick Ohio State, so I'm going to throw that out there. But if you're being objective and you're talking about picking two teams and one team has beaten another team a number of times in a row or the vast majority of the amount in a set terms of a time period, Ohio State has done that to them. And I know Ryan Day is brand new. We're going to see what that pressure, because there's a pressure on him to keep the legacy up and keep Jim Harbaugh winless against Ohio State. But now you also have to break in Justin Fields as well. What does that team up north do with Shea Patterson? Do they actually bring the offense into the 21st century, or do they still do 3 yards in the cloud of dust when you have a mobile quarterback and you're not opening up? They got Peoples at wide receiver. He's gotten some recruits in there, but I just don't think they've given them the chance to be them best selves in that program. Now the pressure is on them to say, hey, they've lost, you know, Urban Meyer. If not now, when? Is what's going to be the echo for Jim Harbaugh. So there's that level of pressure for him as well. So I'm still going to take Ohio State versus Nebraska, and I just think Ohio State just has enough talent. I think Justin Fields is a 5-star recruit for a reason. I think I like Dobbins at running back. I like K.J. Hill at wide receiver. Our defensive line is flat out loaded. It's ridiculous. I think they win it, but do I think they win undefeated? I'm not sure, because my Ohio State team every year finds a way to go on the road and lay an egg. And does that lead them? They have to not find a way to not do that this year to put themselves in that conversation that we're going to talk about next week for the college football championship. But I'm still going to pick Ohio State to win the Big Ten, but that does not automatically earn them a berth into that top four if they lay another Purdue or Iowa egg.
Oh my God.
It just is what it is.
Oh, I tell you what, Ohio State don't want to lose to Purdue again because, you know, Drew Brees gave all those Ohio State players on the Saints team a hard time last year.
Of course they are. As he should.
So, yeah, they don't want to lose to Purdue again this year. I don't think they will, though. So, I don't, you know, I think they'll get the payback this
year.
Ready.
They'll be ready for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I, you know, obviously, J.K. did a great job breaking down the Big Ten, and he follows the conference probably better than Andre and I do combined. And but I'll just give a little bit of 2 cents here. And obviously, I like Ohio State, too. I think they're the clear-cut favorite to win the conference this year. They're the most talented team in the conference still, by far. And then they get Justin Fields from Georgia, another five-star recruit as well. Coming in right away. I don't think this team misses a beat, even with Ryan Day as the head coach this year. I know they lost a few players on defense and Draymond Jones and Nick Bosa. Well, Nick Bosa really didn't play last year, basically. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they still have the most talented roster in the conference, and they're going to be a tough out, and even a contender to be in the playoffs. So we'll talk about that on next week. Michigan is the second-best team in the conference. Unfortunately, they play in the same division with the Ohio State. They have the second-best roster in the conference as well. The key is how big of an impact will Josh Gattis has as a new offensive coordinator. Can he bring some swag to that Michigan offense? Because they haven't had it. They have not had any kind of swag, any kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Just no originality in that offense, just basic.
Creativity,
you know,
probably does.
Yeah, no creativity. Yeah, duh. Yeah, they just not. They need something that's going to bring some excitement to that offense, and they need something
that's
going to wake
football,
up.
That's Michigan football, though, man. It's the big hogs, man.
Yeah.
That
3 yards in a cloud of dust.
3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Said, yeah, that's what they're known for.
Yeah,
man.
But they need something
that's
going to bring some swag into that offense, and we'll see. Getting Josh Gattis, you know, who once coached at Penn State and Alabama, and he's brought some, you know, excitement to both of those offenses as a wide receiver coach and a passing game coordinator. So we'll see what he can do going to Michigan now. So that's going to be the most intriguing thing about this team. They have talent. There's no doubt about it. But he, more than any other player, how big of an impact he's going to have coordinating that offense, Josh Gattis. So we'll see. Right now I'm still predicting second place in a division behind Ohio State. And I totally agree. I think Nebraska wins the West this year. Adrian Martinez, he showed a lot last year. This Nebraska team still has some weaknesses. But I think compared to the other teams in the conference, I look at Wisconsin this year. They are strong on the offensive line, and obviously that's going to keep them in a lot of games. I think they take a big drop off defensively this year, though, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, and that's why I think Iowa will be their second best team in that conference this year. Kirk Ferentz got a very strong bunch. I think Wisconsin will be the third place team, actually. Offensive line, like I said, is going to help them with the running game and pass protection, but they're not really strong. They're hardly anywhere else on that football team this year. And so I think they have a drop off as well in Wisconsin. So I look at Ohio State, Nebraska championship game, and Ohio State wins in a route.
Not in a route. It's a close game because Nebraska gave them everything they wanted last year in Ohio State. Now they got to go to Norman next year. That's going to be a big game for Ohio State and Nebraska.
Norman is in Oklahoma.
Sorry, not Norman.
Lincoln.
Lincoln. Sorry.
Nebraska.
One of them damn cities in Middle America. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm going to disrespect y'all. Yes, Norman is in Oklahoma. Lincoln, Nebraska. Sorry.
You going back to the old Nebraska, Oklahoma rivalry.
I'm talking about that Big 8, son. I'm old. That Big 8
was
back in the day.
Man, I used to watch that game every Saturday. That was one of my favorite college football games to watch every year, Nebraska and Oklahoma back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right, let's for the sake of getting some rest tomorrow, let's kind of wrap up. Let's save the Big Ten and the Big 12. Hopefully we can change that. We can say that for next week. That's okay, guys. Unless y'all want to get to it, we can
that's
talk about this. Yeah.
So you guys don't care. Pac-12 and Big 12 next week.
Yeah, we'll say that because, again, I'm sure
Oklahoma
we'll get some with the Curtis. There it is. Pretty much that's how much it's going to be.
No.
Yep. You know, Jalen.
Watch Utah now, the Pac-12, though. Watch Utah.
Yeah, I'm
going to text Dylan. We'll talk about that next week.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some interesting, you know, definitely, like I said, you know, what's going to happen with Texas, obviously, what's going to happen with, like you said, Utah. You know, obviously, Oklahoma getting Jalen Hurst is huge, so that's another thing, too, but they should definitely take that
division.
We'll see.
Watch Washington with Jacob Eason, but Washington won't have the depth like they've had in years past, so that could hurt them.
Yep. This was pretty good. The last two topics, the one is like, who is your favorite NBA player of all time? And I'm going to kind of like sit back because there's a couple of them that
currently and in all time.
Currently in all time? Okay. That changes the persona of the question here now. But again, since you put it that way, I'll let you lead it, Rod. If you'll go, then I'll kind of wrap it up too. Because now that you put it that way, I have to think because it's kind of crazy. But go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. Well, all time, it was easy for me. I was a huge Dr. J fan. And watching him play coming up in my younger years, you know, I still remember those dunks he did on Michael Cooper and the Lakers,
see,
you know, with the windmill and then going baseline with the reverse underneath the basket. Dr. J was definitely one of my favorites basketball. He's definitely still probably my favorite NBA player to watch of all time. You know, going back to some of the things that he was doing before Jordan was doing. And so he's definitely my favorite of all time. Currently, I probably, you know, if LeBron never would have went to the Lakers, it probably would have been LeBron. And if he got this foolishness with Anthony Davis. But right now, I just got to go with I got to go with Drew Holiday. I got to go with one of my Pelicans players.
Come on, man.
Two-way player, does it on both ends of the floor,
gosh.
Very underrated.
There we go.
And he's going to have to come up big and be a leader this year with his young Pelicans team. So Drew Holiday is my favorite NBA player currently.
I cannot believe you said
bro.
Drew Holiday.
Come
on, man.
I can't believe. That's for real, bro.
Come on, Skip.
That's
stick with my team. Hey, I guarantee
that's
you both of y'all are going to say one of y'all favorite players today is from one of y'all favorite teams.
That's not a guarantee at all.
Why can't my favorite player on my favorite team?
Skippy. You're right. You're 100% right. Both of my players are from my favorite team. And I'll be honest with you, it's not because of anything that's happened in the past with Breeze talking about going back and forth with the Lakers. Growing up, Michael Jordan was ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. But Magic Johnson is my favorite player of all time. You're talking about a dude that come in his rookie year and play center and would go for like 42, 10, and 7. And helped him win the title. I mean, that's just ridiculous. His ability, the Showtime, is Magic Johnson. You know, he and Larry Bird saved the NBA. They helped make Michael Jordan be able to be Michael Jordan when that league was faltering, when everybody was getting suspended for drugs and all the kind of wild stuff, and the viewership was way down. Those two guys helped save the league, and that's the reason why I am a Lakers fan, is because of Magic Johnson. And that's for real. That's real talk. I didn't have a team. We don't have a team in Cincinnati. I hated Reggie Miller, and I just don't have any love really for the Cleveland teams. Only rooted for the Cavs because LeBron was there. Segway, favorite current player is most definitely LeBron James. He's ridiculous. He is Magic Johnson. They want him to be Michael Jordan, but that's
he wasn't
not
before
who
he
is. He
was the Lakers, though, right?
What about Kobe?
He was
Bryant?
Still my favorite.
But
Kobe's
not
right
in the league anymore.
Yeah, we said right now. And I love Kobe, but I love Magic more than I love Kobe. And I would just own that. Sure. I do. I am a Magic Johnson fan. That would be my favorite player. And he's a Laker, and he's the reason why I'm a Lakers fan. So that's why it gets me to that point. But for LeBron does and the run of Eastern Conference championships, he might end up being top three in you know, assists and points. I mean, that's just unheard of. In terms, I mean, I know he's going to play longer than some of the older guys did, but to end up in the top three in assists and points, like, come on now. You got as much as he has the Hollywood stuff and he gets over the top, and I get it. Sometimes I see his tweets, and when he comes out, and I'm like, dude, I just need you to go sit down somewhere and be cool. You're not helping me as a fan of yours make an argument for you. But in terms of what he can do on the court right now, it's most definitely LeBron James. There's no doubt.
Good call. It's tough, man. I'm going to throw some – it's crazy because growing up, you know, you were in the Michael Jordan era. So that was, you know, clearly the guy that everyone appreciated. I'm going to throw an honorable mention to a guy that I just – when I'm also playing basketball, I was in love with Kevin Johnson. That was my guy, man. I just thought, you know, he was a guard.
Oh, KJ.
Sons, and I was just a fan of how his game
is.
Yeah, so I was just – not a man. See, why
that
did that
slam dunk over Olajuwon?
I'm just saying, it was one of the players that I admire, man. Yeah, man. He was just fearless, man. I love the fact that he was a little guy, and I was like, man, that was inspiring, man. So that was the guy that, again, just for me to kind of like. But again, you know, Jordan was the guy. But like I said, I had so much because I was like, man, that's my dude, man. Currently, it's tough, man, because I kind of would definitely show some love to my Steph Curry guy, Steph Curry obviously, but then also Trae Young is a guy too. I'm actually a fan of him. And Ja Morant hasn't done anything, but I just like Ja Morant's game, man, in college. But he's not really officially in the you know, he's not like done anything yet, man. But it's tough, man, to kind of put a like on a lot of players too, because you can kind of go from all that too. But that's what I would say from that perspective too, man. I mean, and it's tough, man. There's a lot of players I just admired growing up, man. From Kevin Garnett to the world to Tim Duncan. There's too many, man. So it's hard to put this is my favorite guy, man, because you watch the errors and you watch this guy, or as Rob said, Dr. J and, you know, Penny Hardaway's and Dave Rod. There's so many great players, man. It's something to say this is my favorite player, you know, so, but it is what it is. So gotcha. That's my two cents on that too. But I will say this as we get ready to wrap up, just kind of talking about Steph Curry's impact on the NBA. I will say that it has been unique because he's definitely changed the way that the game is, the three-point shot, the way that the whole defending and just the fact that this guy, he hasn't been a dominant. Each time you watch the NBA, you have different, like, seems like different players kind of dominate, you know, from a style like a Shaquille O'Neal that couldn't be stopped to a, you know, to a Jordan, to, you know, Joe Dumars or to, you know, Magic Johnson. There's all these Larry Birds, all these great players, and it's hard to have, like, a guard besides a freaking, like, Allen Iverson, another one of my favorite guys, you know, just to just change the way mm-hmm. that the game is. So that's kind of how I feel like Steph Curry, he's just kind of changed, an incredible shooter, changed the way that, you know, the excitement of the game, and it's crazy. So his impact has definitely allowed different teams to kind of, like, let's figure out how to, like, defend. It also has changed the way that people are growing up, that you don't have to be 6'10". To play, you can actually be smaller. Not that, you know, he's ultimately that small, but you can actually come in. If I have a great 3-point shot, I can actually do something. So I think that's impressive that he's done that for the next generation of guys. That, again, you don't have to be a Shaq or you don't have to be a 6'10 guy. You can actually come in and just, you know, hit your shots, and you can change the impact of the game too. So that's kind of my two cents on that.
Shout out to him for Howard and revitalizing the golf program at Howard for the men's and the women's. I give him a lot of love and respect for doing that. He didn't have mm-hmm. to do that. I don't know if everybody's heard that, but he is, yes. For the next 6 years, he is funding the men's and women's golf team at Howard. So,
yes.
Much love.
Wow. Amazing.
That.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
That's all you got to say. It's just sponsoring people. That's all you got for him.
Well, you know, obviously I'm not a Warriors fan. But one thing I will say that Steph Curry, probably one of the first real players that I've seen that really just dominated the game from the 3-point shot. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, we had great shooters in the league before, but, you know, Steph Curry is almost like 50% from the 3-point line. And it was almost to the point where, you know, they will go down and hit a three, another team will go down and hit a two, and it was a 1-point difference on every possession. And next thing you know, they mm-hmm. have 15 points.
Yeah,
third quarter was like that. It was like crazy.
I believe.
Yeah, so I mean, he's one of the in that regard. That's where he's made the big impact. And now you see a lot of guys. You talk about Trae Young. You're seeing guys that's coming into the league like that now, where they can really make mm-hmm. a difference by the 3-point shot now. And I think he was really one of the first real little guys that's really transcended the game. In that regard, like I said, we've had great shooters in the game, Ray Allen, Reggie Miller, so on and so on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but I don't think any of them was as good a shooter as Steph Curry. I don't think they were. Not at all.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I don't think they were as good a shooter as Steph Curry. And I don't think they made that big of an impact the way Steph Curry did from behind the 3-point line. That was like a real weapon, a big difference maker for Steph Curry and the Warriors versus other teams. And so I would say that's his impact on the game. Not to say he don't do other things well, But to me, that's like the real big impact, that he can just come out and just shoot it from 40 feet like it's nothing. And like I said, before you know it, they just trading threes for two against their opponents. And next thing you know, they're up 10, 15 points just like that.
That's the thing. But that's the thing, JQ. But kind of you have some great shooters, man. You think of, like, you know, you think of, like, the freaking Rich Millers. You think of the freaking Rip Hamiltons. But nothing was like that, like Steph Curry, like, three-point shooters. Like, that's just crazy. There's been a lot of great shooters, but, like, man.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
And Rip Hamilton wasn't a great three-point shooter. He was a great, like, 20-foot
shooter. No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. There's great shooters in the game. But that's what I'm saying. That's the difference in Steph Curry. He's a great three-point shooter. There's been some great shooters in the league, you know, but
and
not like that.
Don't talk about Larry Bird.
I
get that, and he changed the game now in this era of basketball to where you have to pick up certain guys from half court, or they will put it in your eye consistently from out there. So I will give you that. But to say that he's the best 3-point shooter, if you give me Reggie Miller or Ray Allen in this era of basketball where it wasn't we have a low post presence, we have to establish that low post presence to play inside out. That was a different basketball game when those guys were playing for the shooting props they had. If you give Ray Allen and Reggie Miller the kind of green light that Steph Curry has in that kind of offense in Golden State, oh, my God. I can't say what kind of numbers they would put up. That's why I kind of have a little bit more of a hesitation about it, is because they were playing a different style of basketball. That was bring it up, run it through the post, and then kick it out if they double-teamed out of it. It was a different style of basketball. It's much more wide open and free-willing today than it was back then. Those guys were great shooters just in the era that didn't always prioritize great shooting right out the gate. It wasn't a, let's go ahead and establish this three and put our foot on their neck and then do something else. Back then it was, hey, we got power forwards, we have centers we pay all this money to. We're going to throw it down to them, let them bang, and then we're going to adjust to that, adjust off them kind of style of play, where today it's a ISO pick and roll at the three-point line, a little beyond the three-point line, and if you don't step out, boom, in your eye. It's just a different kind of game. That's why, he's a great shooter, but if I could see Ray Allen or Reggie Miller play today in this kind of offense in the way you can't hand check today, I don't know what kind of numbers they would put up, I guess my argument.
I mean, different. That's everyone, JQ, man, because Barker's trying to have 100 points, man, the way that the game is, man. He was just,
I was
you know, it's
shooting.
Hard to put that.
I'm not talking about, I'm
fair
talking
enough.
About, I'm talking
fair
about
enough.
Shooting.
Fair enough. I got you.
I was talking about
shooting. It's just tough.
I mean, that's a good
okay.
point. But, I mean, I still just haven't seen anybody shoot the ball the way Curry did, that way consistently. I mean, you look at the stat sheet in some games, he's hit like 7, 8, 9 three-pointers. When you go back to the Reggie Millers, the Ray Allen, and Birds, yeah, they would hit 2 or 3 a game. But you wouldn't see too many. You wouldn't see them often. Like Steph Curry often would have 7, 8 three-pointers in a ball game.
Different from basketball.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's a great point. Not going to argue with you there. But I just still hadn't seen – like I don't like the Warriors. I don't like Steph Curry either.
I don't like you either.
But
if he was on your squad,
I'm just being honest.
You'd be the same.
I just haven't –
it's all good.
I'm just giving him his props when it comes from a shooting standpoint. I just haven't seen anybody shoot the ball the way he shoots the ball. Not to say we haven't had any great shooters in the league. He's been tremendous. But I just hadn't seen no guy, like you said, just put it in high. Just come down there and just put it in your eye consistently. And Larry Bird was a good shooter. He was a good shooter from 20 feet out, too. And like I said, you didn't see many games of him with 8 three-pointers in the stat sheet. And you have a couple.
He had Kevin McHale. That's my point. That's why.
The game was different. That's what we're talking about. The game was
way
different.
That's
he was involved with the team. He had to get Dennis Crazy.
Curry had
Johnson,
Kevin Durant
everyone.
For a few years, too.
Not the same kind of game. Kevin McHale was strictly a throw it into him, back to the basket kind of post kind of player, and you better get him the ball because he can score and throw it up and rebound.
Kevin McHale, one of the best low post players of all time. I think Kevin McHale and Hakeem Olajuwon probably had the best low post moves that I've seen.
Right. And that's my point. You have to utilize that guy, keep him involved in the offense. I'm not saying Steph Curry is not a bad shooter, as a bad shooter, and he's not deserved to be put in that kind of talk. So anybody listening to it, that's not what I'm saying. My only point was just in terms of the style of basketball and the other guys you had on your team, the way you built your teams back then is different now. That if they had that kind of wide open offense they have today, we may be telling a different story. As great as those guys we just talked about are, if they had played in these kind of in this era the way they play basketball today, it might be a different story. But no disrespect to Steph Curry, that dude is phenomenal. He has changed it to the way they play it today in terms of you better pick that dude up at half court, like you said, in your eye, bang, whole crowd goes nuts.
Yeah. But you know that those Houston Rockets championship teams, those two championship teams, you know, they were a draw and kick team. I don't know if you remember when they had Kenny Smith and who else they had on the team? Sam Cassell, Robert Horry. They were a good team
alien,
that stood behind
the
3-point line.
Oh, my God.
If,
awesome.
If you double Hakeem, he was kicking out one of those guys and they were hitting threes. So, I mean, they were another team that was like a – but they went from inside to outside. I mean, it was Hakeem, and if Hakeem was doubled, he was kicking it out, and he just surrounded them with 3-point shooters. And but you still didn't have that one guy like a Curry that would just hit like 8 or 9 in a game. But they had like a lot of guys on the perimeter that could knock down threes.
You know what? Really quickly, that Houston team was a better version of the Magic Dwight Howard team that made it to the finals. That I mean, that's who they were. Like when Dwight was dominant, you could kick him to him, and he had hurt. And he had Turkaloo and those guys that could shoot the three inside out. That's kind of how they played.
Yeah,
of course, Houston was just a better version of that. But you're right.
You know what's funny? Before we wrap up, for the lady gets on this, because I always there was a great story about we bonded with Houston whenever you said Sam Cassell. There was a great story. Remember Stephen Davis, Stephen Francis. He had a great story. About how him and Cassell were first, whenever Cassell's coming in the league, and him, Cassell's like, I got you, I'm gonna take you on the league, rookie. And there, he was playing against him the next day. He hung out with Steve Francis the whole night. Like, what's up, man? Took him to a strip club. He was telling the story as like in the Players Tribune. And then he's like, the next day, and he was like, dog tired. He's like, Sam Cassell like owned him. He's like, what you got to do, rookie? And he's like, that was like, that's something I always told him. He's like, ever since then, you can't be friends with people. It was hilarious how. He's hanging with him the whole night, buying him shots, buying him drinks, and then they had a game the next day. And he's like, there's no way Sam Cassell is going to like stay the whole night. Sam Cassell stayed the whole night and then whipped him the next day. He was like, man, I learned my lesson so fast. He was like, I thought we were boys. And he like destroyed me on the court. It was hilarious, man.
Welcome to the league, bro.
he's like, there's no way Sam Cassell is going to be ready to play. He was like, he destroyed him. It was hilarious. Anyway, that's my little 2 cents in that story, man. I thought about that when he talked about Houston and everything. Like, just brought back all these great memories, man. Sam Cassell was underrated point guard, man. Just a great guy. All right, gentlemen.
He was.
Before the lady gets on this, too, I know we had to wrap this up. But I don't have any last-minute thoughts. It was a great show, man. Again, not that we don't like Curtis and Gary. It was really good for us to kind of just go back to the old-school way of just having enough time to – share our thoughts, especially me. I don't get a chance to share as much because, I'm just kind of like, distributing feels like because everyone's jumping on. But, again, good to get those thoughts in and add that in. But let's go ahead and wrap this up, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for another great edition of Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Next week, we got some more NFL predictions and more college football predictions. So you don't want to miss it. And obviously, we're going to try to squeeze in a little baseball as we get down to the stretch run with these pennant races here. So next week, we're going to be on the air Tuesday night. We're wrapping up the third week in preseason. We got a mini weekend in college football this weekend with Florida and Miami going at it. So we'll recap all of those matchups as well. You don't want to miss it. Once again, we're going to be on the air next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. Good night, people.
And all of that, for sure. And if you're going to have your fantasy draft and you know what's going to happen, show up for your fantasy draft. Have a game plan for your fantasy draft. Don't take every 2 minutes on every pick or have an auto pick and then we have to wait for a minute and then to have a picture that you do. Know when your fantasy draft is, people can show up for and have a game plan so we can all get on with our lives throughout the day. I mean, I have fun doing fantasy drafts, but I don't want to do it for 2 hours. Come on, people. Like, I enjoy
the
camaraderie.
We got in about an hour this time, though, right? We got in about an hour.
Yeah,
though, right?
But I mean,
we got in an hour.
But only 5 people logged in tonight.
This is just a JQ PSA. That's all it is. This is just a JQ PSA.
Yeah.
When you have your
fantasy draft.
Well,
quite a few of the people said they set their draft boards because they weren't going to be able to make it. So they did tell me that tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
they said they did that.
Okay. You're taking 8 quarterbacks. But I digress. The PSA is show up for your fantasy draft prepared and know when it is and have a game plan to go with it. That's all I want to say. I've enjoyed the show. This was a throwback show. The three of us. And Dre always gets your stuff off. Don't let nobody else be on the call. Keep from getting your stuff off in the show. I enjoy your perspective. Please keep doing it.
It would take 20, like a whole other hour, man, if I talk, man. So it's just, it would take forever, man, if I'm adding my 5 cents.
Well,
talking about appreciate that. No.
Well, if you notice, I've been trying to, you know, I've been trying to, whoever, if it's something about the Braves or your team,
yeah.
I try to make sure that you go first. Because that's the team that you follow, you're probably more knowledgeable of it. If it's the Lakers,
no,
it's AQ. If it's the Blazers, it's those guys. You know what I'm saying? So, it's, you know, I normally just try to put that in the notes and the topics of the show to give, you know, that way, you know, if a team is more, if someone's more familiar with that particular team or something like that, give them the opportunity. And so that should give you an opportunity to have your perspective too as well, Drake.
That's definitely appreciated. I'm saying that too. Like I said, I just know like if we look at all the topics and we try to get all this stuff, it's going to be a long show. So I know some people get a little long-winded and I'm like, got a minute to talk. So you're trying to fit all that in, if you will, too. But I totally get it, man, because we definitely are long-winded. We have some fun with it too. So it's not a knock, just more or less like just trying to like keep everything balanced. But it's good. I've been enjoying it, to say the least. Anyway, like I said, fun times. And again, I will say that I love the throwback, man. I miss this, man. So, again, craziness. All right, I got to get out of here. Anyway, I was going to say something, but, again, just brings back good memories. But, hey, JQ, looking forward to tomorrow, today, later on today,
yes,
obviously. We'll keep it going, man. So I'm looking forward to that. I kind of hyped it up for Marcy, man. Hopefully we'll have some fun, man, because she may not be all that interested in the game, but she's like, yeah, that's fun, man. So we'll hang out, say the least.
Absolutely.
Get the pitches, Rob.
Looking
stay tuned, bro. All right, guys, man, have a fantastic week. I'm sure we will be communicating via text by some instance, as always. Until the next time, we'll get the show set up and have a fantastic, fantastic week, guys. Talk soon.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Good night, people.
Later.